ETF Prime is hosted by investment advisors at the ETF Store and sponsored by Legg Mason. Legg Mason's sponsorship is not an endorsement nor a recommendation for any product or service. Legg Mason Investor Services LLC is not affiliated with the ETF Store, ETF.com, or any of its affiliates. The ETF Store is not affiliated with ETF.com or any of its affiliates. ETF.com's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or an indication by ETF.com of the value of any ETF Store product or service. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. All investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. The ETF Store owns and is responsible for all program content. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Legg Mason is a leading global investment company committed to helping clients reach their financial goals through long-term actively managed strategies. Legg Mason offers a broad range of equity, fixed income, alternative, and cash strategies worldwide. It is comprised of a diverse family of specialized investment managers, each with their own independent approach to research and analysis, and has over a century of experience in identifying opportunities and delivering astute investment solutions to clients. To learn more, please visit LeggMason.com.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate and Connor will help you get up to date on what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
Welcome to ETF Prime, Nate Geraci alongside Connor Kelly. As always, thank you so much for joining us. I also want to thank the exclusive sponsor of ETF Prime, Legg Mason. We have a really nice show for you today. Currently, there are over 2,200 ETFs available to invest in. Of course, that number seems to grow just about every week. And without question, I would say there are many positives to this growth. There's a lot of really interesting innovation occurring, a lot more options to build portfolios with. However, this is also a bit of a double-edged sword, because having more options means there's more homework to do as an investor, right? There are more ways to trip yourself up when putting together a portfolio. Today, we're going to focus on some areas you should be thinking about when evaluating ETFs. And to begin with, we're going to look at something that I don't think gets much attention, which is ETF trading. Because remember, the E and the T in ETF does stand for exchange traded, right? You have the flexibility to buy and sell ETF shares during the day, just like you can with individual stocks. You can't do that with mutual funds. So in just a moment, we'll be joined by ETF.com's Sumeet Roy. He's going to discuss some important considerations when buying and selling ETF shares. You know, Connor, I think for us to be fair, we always like to talk about the low cost of ETFs, how you can save money with lower fund fees. But the fact is, you can easily give some or all of those savings back with poor ETF trading and just not paying attention to the costs involved here.
That's exactly right. I mean, you mentioned the fact that you can buy and sell ETFs all day like a stock, and that unique structure of ETFs is the reason why they have some of their built-in advantages, specifically tax efficiency and lower cost. But there's certainly risk when you're able to trade ETFs throughout the day, so you need to understand how best to buy and sell ETFs. And look, there's a lot that goes into evaluating ETFs. We've discussed this topic quite a bit on the show. But the reality is, the first experience you have with any ETF is when you buy it.
That's right.
And you need to understand the do's and don'ts of getting a good price for that particular ETF. And look, taken as a whole, the ETF universe in general has a ton of liquidity, and most ETFs trade with very tight spreads. But when you look at perhaps some smaller sized ETFs or ETFs in less liquid areas of the investment world, you can save yourself a whole lot of money if you know how to best buy and sell ETFs in these circumstances.
Yeah, so we're going to start there today. And then DJ Tierney, Managing Director and Senior Client Portfolio Strategist at Charles Schwab Investment Management, he's also going to talk ETF due diligence. This is an area he specifically focuses on. So we'll hear what he believes are some of the most important factors when evaluating ETFs. Also, Schwab happens to be one of the fastest growing ETF providers. If you look last year, the only two firms who took in more new money than Schwab were iShares and Vanguard. And I would say, like both of those firms, Schwab has certainly placed an emphasis on low-cost core building blocks in a portfolio. As a matter of fact, Schwab is one of the providers often mentioned as a potential to offer the first zero-fee ETFs. So we're going to try to cover a lot of ground with a DJ. I want to get his thoughts on ETF growth overall. I am going to ask him about Fidelity going to zero and the potential for zero-fee ETFs. And then again, we'll talk ETF due diligence. Later in the show, we'll switch gears a bit. Jacob Hutchinson, Managing Director at Premise Capital, is going to spotlight a unique ETF. It's called the Premise Capital Frontier Advantage Diversified Tactical ETF. It actually invests in other ETFs, and it shifts holdings depending upon market conditions. It's rules-based, not actively managed, but the idea here is to help control risk in a portfolio. So we'll look under the hood of that ETF as well. As always, if you have questions or comments, you can visit etfprime.com, or you can find us on Twitter at Nate Geraci and at CKelly1980. Let's start today with ETF.com, Sumeet Roy.
Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Sumeet, it's funny. As I mentioned at the top, we all like to focus on the potential benefits of ETFs, right? Lower costs, tax efficiency, those sorts of things. But in the end, the E and the T in ETF does stand for exchange traded. And it does feel like when it comes to evaluating different ETFs, perhaps sometimes that gets lost in the shuffle. First, do you agree with that? Just that this is something that tends to get overlooked by investors?
Thanks for having me, Nate. And absolutely, I do agree that ETF trading is something that's often overlooked, an overlooked cost when it comes to ETFs. Like you said early in the show, expense ratios, they tend to get all the attention, and rightly so. It's a big consideration and a big cost associated with holding an ETF, and that's of utmost importance if you're a buy-and-hold investor. But trading cost, what we're talking about with trading cost is essentially the cost associated with getting in and out of an ETF. Those matter too, and they matter even more if you have a short-term trading horizon or a short-term investment horizon where you're buying and selling frequently. Things like commissions, the bid-ask spread, and even the premium or the discount of an ETF compared to its net asset value, those are very important to understand when you're buying or selling an ETF.
All right, so I thought maybe it would be good if we took this in two pieces. First, let's talk spreads and why they're important, and then we can get into some best ETF trading practices. So first, do you mind just explaining what the bid-ask spread is on an ETF and why it does matter?
Sure. So the bid-ask spread is the spread between the bid and the ask. And the bid is, of course, the highest price that a buyer is willing to pay, and the ask is the lowest price that a seller is willing to accept. At ETF.com, we usually express that spread as a percentage. So you'll see an extremely liquid ETF like the SPDR S&P 500 ETF Trust SPY have extremely tiny spreads. We're talking about 0.01% or less. That is the spread between the bid and the ask for SPY. On the other hand, some illiquid commodity ETNs are out there with spreads in the double-digit percentage range. So it goes without saying you want a lower spread when you're trading an ETF. A lower spread is always going to be better than a higher spread because you buy at the ask and you sell at the bid. So if that gap is big, your ETF has to go up a bunch just for you to break even.
Yeah, so how important in the end do you think it is for investors to pay attention to those spreads? And maybe you alluded a bit to this earlier, just that if you're a longer-term investor, maybe not quite as much. But where do you think this falls on sort of the ETF due diligence checklist?
Exactly, Nate. I really think it depends on how active of a trader you are. So for a long-term buy-it-and-forget-it investor, the spread is simply going to matter more than if you're a day trader, for example. because an active trader, a day trader, someone like that, they're going to be buying at the ask and selling at the bid a lot. So that gap between the two is going to be a cost that adds up a lot, and they're going to have to pay attention to that. On the other hand, a long-term investor is only going to be buying and selling infrequently, so that's a cost they simply don't have to pay attention to as much. But in either case, you want to avoid ETFs with unusually large spreads. The average spread, we did the math on ETF.com, for all U.S.-listed ETFs is about 0.48%. That's pretty high, but the asset-weighted average ETF spread is only 0.04%, since most people are gravitating towards these large liquid ETFs, and those tend to have small spreads. So you asked, Nate, how does it rank in terms of other factors to consider? I would certainly put it below expense ratio and tracking error, things like that. But it rises in importance the more active of a trader you are.
You mentioned the liquidity of larger, more established ETFs, but I think one of the myths out there is that smaller ETFs or new ETFs, perhaps they're not as liquid. But doesn't it ultimately come down to what the ETFs actually own, the underlying holdings? Doesn't that drive spreads more than anything?
Absolutely, Nate. Underlying holdings do matter. And I think people need to understand the difference between primary and secondary liquidity when it comes to ETFs. So when we talk about secondary liquidity, that's the liquidity of the actual ETF shares on the open market. It's what most regular investors are going to see when they're looking at their broker and they're deciding to buy or sell an ETF. And that's usually a function of, just like with the stock, it's a function of the volume of the security, the volume of the ETF. And usually a new or a small fund, it's going to have a less volume, so it's going to have less secondary liquidity. But if you're a large investor, you're probably more concerned with primary liquidity, and that's the liquidity of the underlying securities of the ETF. If those are liquid, then a large investor who trades, you know, thousands of shares, they can simply use an authorized participant to create and redeem shares at the net asset value. In that case, you really aren't going to be concerned with the secondary liquidity of the ETF. So it depends, you know, what type of investor you are, whether you can buy those big blocks of shares to create and redeem. That's going to determine whether you're more concerned about primary or secondary liquidity.
All right, so clearly investors should pay some attention to the spreads, but let's talk some other best ETF trading practices. And perhaps the most important tip you often hear when buying or selling ETFs is to use limit orders and not market orders, especially when trafficking in less liquid ETFs. Do you want to explain why that is?
Sure, Nate. You hit the nail on the head. Limit orders are one of the most important things you can do. And, you know, when you put in a limit order, what you're doing is you're specifying to your broker the price you would like to buy or sell an ETF. It's a specific price. So if the ETF hits that price, your broker is going to execute your buy or sell at that price or better. So even if a ETF has a wide bid-ask spread, you can often put your limit order in between those two prices, and a lot of times you're going to get filled. So a limit order stands in contrast to a market order, where your broker is just going to give you the prevailing market bid or the prevailing market ask price. You really want to avoid market orders most of the time, but especially during very volatile market periods, because, you know, when the market's swinging around wildly, you're probably going to get filled at a very bad price. That's when you really want to use a limit order.
All right, we have a few minutes left here. Any other words of wisdom you would offer in terms of ETF trading?
I can't emphasize enough, Nate, this idea that I don't think ETFs encourage investors to trade. I know there's a lot of controversy, a lot of debate about that topic. I think it ultimately comes down to, as you were talking about in the beginning of the show, ETFs give investors choice, You know, it gives them choices about asset classes to buy, about geographies to buy, sectors to buy, and it also gives investors choice about when or how to trade. So does that choice equal more trading? Does it encourage people to trade more? I would argue it doesn't. Choice doesn't equal encouragement. But on the other hand, if you are the type of investor who is easily tempted to trade, then maybe ETFs aren't the investment vehicle for you. You'll be better off in a mutual fund if you can't get over that temptation that ETFs may provide to you.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that. I've always said it does come down to investor behavior. And I would say even with mutual funds, the fact is you can buy or sell shares every day at the end of the day. And if you have poor behavior, I just don't know, is that really going to make that much of a difference if somebody is bent on trading? So nevertheless, excellent analysis, Sameed. I think it is important that investors look at spreads and understand some best practices around ETF trading. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Nate. It was wonderful being here.
That was ETF.com, Sameed Roy. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Charles Schwab's DJ Tierney. We'll continue talking ETF due diligence, and then also look at Schwab's ETF growth and some broader ETF trends as well. You're listening to ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime, Nate and Connor in studio. Our next guest today is DJ Tierney, Managing Director and Senior Client Portfolio Strategist at Charles Schwab Investment Management. Charles Schwab is currently the fifth largest ETF provider in the country. They offer 22 ETFs with over $125 billion invested in those ETFs. Notably, the average fund fee for their 22 ETFs is about 0.12%, 12 basis points. And there's no question low cost has been one of the key drivers of Schwab's success. They're one of the fastest growing ETF providers. As a matter of fact, they've grown more than twice as fast as the ETF industry as a whole, which is saying something given the growth we've seen in ETFs overall. DJ is now joining us via phone from San Francisco. DJ, great having you back on the program.
Thank you, Nate. Excited to be back again. Appreciate the invite. Glad to talk to you.
So, DJ, I certainly want to get to Schwab's ETF growth, but first, let's maybe talk ETFs as a whole. So we are continuing to see investors move towards ETFs. Obviously, low cost remains a big focus. What's been your take on ETF flows over the past year or so, and does anything stand out to you besides the focus on low cost?
Yes, 2018 was an interesting year on several fronts. After a long period of calm, we had a pickup in volatility last year. There were some people that thought when the market started to, you know, see periods of correction and volatility that we'd see, you know, ETF investors kind of run for the hills. But the opposite was true. It was a strong year for ETF flows, not an all-time record, but second largest year in terms of inflows into ETFs. And then beyond that, just that it was a healthy year of inflows. Three kind of interesting takeaways. The first, we saw more conservative allocations, where advisors and investors, you know, kind of de-risked a little bit and put more money into the safe harbors of fixed income. Secondly, a really big drop in flows into international equities, which was the leading broad asset class in 2017. That dropped quite a bit, which is related to the conservative trend. And then lastly, another strong year for strategic beta adoption, healthy growth year over year in strategic beta. So those are the three big macro themes. You know, just a little more detail on the conservative side. What we saw is as volatility picked up in the first quarter, you saw flows pick up into short duration treasury ETFs, We saw that in our product lineup, and it was reflected in the industry as a whole. You saw money come out of other parts of fixed income, like high yield and long duration corporate bond ETFs, and really shorten up, which makes sense. It's an insight into advisors and investors reacting to the market opportunity. And then on the international equity, again, flows didn't stop. You still had net inflows in that area of $60 billion, but it was down quite a bit from the $150 billion that went in the year prior. So as EM, the trade wars probably, you know, manifested itself in expectations for international growth ebbing, you saw people put money less money there. And then strategic beta and overall strong flows, that maps to what our surveys say. We do an annual investor survey, and advisors say, you know, 69% of advisors say they're going to put more money into ETFs in the next 5 years. So the macro trend of strong growth into ETFs as a vehicle, we expect to continue.
All right. So I asked you if anything stood out besides the focus on low cost. And I think we both know investors have continued to gravitate towards lower cost investments. You know, a big story last year was Fidelity going to zero on four of their index mutual funds, charging no fee. And as I'm sure you're aware, there is a lot of chatter around if and when ETFs might go to zero. Certainly Schwab is often mentioned as a possibility here. Now, I know you can't speak to what Schwab may or may not do, but can you maybe offer some thoughts on Fidelity going to zero and maybe how you view the overall competitive environment here?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at Schwab, you know, we really do believe that costs matter. And the move towards a focus on expenses and lower costs is beneficial for investors. And we've been right there, as you mentioned. We've been a very competitive driver of lowering costs, and investors have benefited. We have very low expense ratios, and we price very competitively. Regarding the zero-fee products, you know, we continue to evaluate our products and listen to our investors. Some investors really like this idea, but others are skeptical of the zero-fee concept, and they prefer, you know, having greater transparency into exactly how they're paying their asset manager. As you point out, Fidelity did not offer a zero-fee ETF. They did it in the mutual fund. And with mutual funds, you have the ability to restrict its sale to your own platform, which is what they did. By definition, exchange-traded funds can be bought and sold on exchanges at arm's length away from the provider, so the benefit of captive money on your platform is lost. And yeah, I think we should all acknowledge, everybody should acknowledge, that there are costs in offering and managing mutual funds and ETFs. You know, with scale, when you get to, you know, billions in a fund and hundreds of billions in, under management, you can reduce the costs, but they're still real. Portfolio managers, disseminating information like fact sheets and regulatory filings and all the things that we need to do to properly manage our funds require expenses, and our investors understand that. So beyond that, we're starting to go above and beyond in terms of what we offer in terms of value-added content and services. So we're trying to strike a balance between delivering high-quality, low-cost products alongside high-quality service and support, and having this no trade-off approach that our customers come to expect from us is really where we're trying to strike our balance.
DJ, on that note, do you have any concerns that investors might be placing too much focus on fund fees? Does that worry you at all?
Well, costs are an important criteria. This shouldn't be the only criteria. And so, yeah, if you look at, 95% of ETF flows last year went to products with OERs of 20 basis points or less. So it clearly is a driver. But, you know, based on our interactions with our investors and clients, it's not their only criteria. And what we're the first to say is you don't start with cost, right? You start with what are the needs of your investor and mapping, you know, looking for exposures that match their risk return profile and what they need. Because, you know, if you just went strictly by cost, you know, your whole portfolio would probably be, you know, U.S. equities and maybe U.S. treasuries, the two asset classes where you can get ETFs for as low as 3 basis points. So we prefer investors start, if you start with your exposure and then bring in costs after, there's so many other things to consider. I don't think it's a problem at this point, but we do point out it's not the only criteria.
Well, that's a good segue here. Let's talk more about ETF due diligence. Earlier in the show, we talked about paying attention to ETF trading costs and really kind of this idea of total cost of ETF ownership. You mentioned exposure. putting costs aside, what do you view as some of the most important factors when evaluating ETFs?
Yeah, it's a great question. We spend a lot of time on this with our content development. We actually have an ETF due diligence guide. So, you know, start with exposure. And then after you've determined the right asset class and exposure and, you know, the investment objectives of the fund match what your investor or your portfolio needs, then we go to total cost of ownership. And I did hear you guys, you were speaking about, you know, liquidity and, you know, expenses of transaction expenses. So total cost of ownership isn't just the expense ratio, but it includes things like commissions, tracking accuracy, even tax efficiency. So there's a lot. Once you start to peel back the onion, there are a lot of differentiating factors when looking between ETFs. And one really big one that we like to point out is actually considering who the provider is. You know, a quick anecdote, when I was in graduate school a long time ago, back in the mid-90s, my father came to me for the very first time and asked for financial advice, which was a big seminal moment. Dad actually asked for my advice. And I introduced him to the concept of ETFs, and there weren't a whole lot around in 1995, but I gave him a few ideas. I recently was going through his financials, helping him again, and I realized that he owned two of the ETFs that I recommended back in the mid-90s. And the point is, that's a long time. And that's the way ETFs should work. If we have a long-term horizon, you should realize that if you buy an ETF in 2019, if it goes well, you might own that in 10 or 15 or 20 years. And so the provider, will that provider be around? Is that a provider you want to enter into a long-term relationship with? And so we have a piece we wrote last year called The 9 Key Questions to Ask a Provider, where you really start to ask questions about their culture and their commitment to the ETF space as an asset manager. So we don't think you can go too wrong considering your provider as well as cost and all the other considerations.
DJ, you bring up an interesting area because, as you know, there are a lot of upstart ETF providers bringing new products to market. And some of those products are going to be successful, some are not. For the average investor, how do they begin to evaluate those providers? So, you know, certainly if you look at some of the larger providers, we know they've been around for decades and decades. But what about the smaller providers?
Yeah, so you just, you need to ask about what their infrastructure is, right? I mean, you can ask how committed they are, and then their answer, you know, what have they invested? You know, what kind of portfolio management team do they have? Do they have capital markets capabilities? You know, it's you don't want to dismiss all of the new providers, but I think you should acknowledge that someone that's got a track record that's been in the market and has demonstrated the ability to provide tax efficiency, has a proven and a well-understood securities lending program, and just a philosophy that you can kind of get your arms around. That does make sense and should be a differentiating point. To your point, there's over 100 ETF providers now, and a big percentage of them have come online in the last 3 years. So, you know, I think it's okay to look for a provider with a track record and at least, you know, tip the scale in that direction if you've got funds that appear equivalent on face value, but to go with an established provider.
Our guest is DJ Tierney, Managing Director and Senior Client Portfolio Strategist at Charles Schwab Investment Management. DJ, if we could go back to cost for just a moment and sort of this idea of the total cost of ETF ownership, what about commission-free ETFs? And if I recall correctly, I believe Schwab was the first to offer commission-free ETFs. And on the Schwab platform, I think you currently offer 265 ETFs commission-free altogether. Where should this be on the due diligence checklist?
Yeah, so just write in your total cost of ownership. You know, you've got your expense ratio, you've got your cost of transacting, you've got tax efficiency. So it's just a part of the overall equation, and you know we were very early in the industry there. Others have followed, and so you know with the right advisor, taking transaction costs into expense after OER is a good place to have that consideration.
All right, we have a few minutes left here. I want to make sure we circle back to Schwab's ETF growth, and I saw a stat in Investor's Business Daily that over the past 4 quarters, and this was published in December, that Schwab ETF assets had grown 42% compared to nearly 18% for the ETF industry as a whole, which is just remarkable to me. What's driving that? I mean, obviously, we know cost plays a role, but what else? Why have investors taken to Schwab ETFs?
Well, you know, we think we've done beyond just delivering low costs. We have delivered on the other key attributes of ETFs. We're an industry leader in delivering tax efficiency. We're an industry leader in actually tracking performance, where we deliver returns that are as close as possible and as close as anybody else in the industry in matching the indices. And beyond that, what we've really been focused on the last couple of years is building out our investor and advisor education content. Because, you know, buying an ETF is a little bit more complicated than buying a mutual fund. So we've got things like trading best practices. We've actually built out an entire ETF know-how curriculum that's all available to advisors and investors to better understand ETFs, better understand the landscape, better understand strategic beta, and all the decisions that need to go into developing a diversified asset allocation model. So we think all those things are combined, and there may be some challenges in the industry. I think that we've got a playbook that's focused on our investors that's working, and we're going to stick to it.
You mentioned challenges. Is there anything that keeps you up at night as it relates to Schwab's ETF business moving forward? Are there any significant challenges that you see on the horizon in the competitive environment?
Well, you know, it's just that landscape we talked about, you know, 100 different providers, ETF launches, particularly launches of products that are more complicated in the strategic beta space. You know, what I hear from advisors as we travel and talk to them is just that the landscape's getting confusing. So, you know, we'll just redouble our efforts to try and keep it real simple. You know, you mentioned at the start of the show, we only have 22 ETFs. You know, we're really focused on the core asset class products that can be used to put together a diversified, low-cost portfolio. So, you know, the challenge is that you get investors and advisors who just get confused and end up, you know, in products that they don't understand. So, you know, our answer to that will be to keep it simple and keep it consistent.
Now, it's funny you mentioned that at the top of the show. I mentioned sort of this double-edged sword of ETF growth and innovation, and that there are a lot of interesting ways to implement portfolios now. But with that comes a lot more homework that has to be done. And I think, as you were saying, just education in general. I actually think moving forward that education piece is going to be perhaps the most important thing as the industry continues to evolve. DJ, as always, wonderful chatting. Really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Nate. Thank you very much for the invite, and thank you for a great show.
That was DJ Tierney, Managing Director and Senior Client Portfolio Strategist at Charles Schwab Investment Management. And you can learn more about Schwab's ETF lineup by visiting schwabetfs.com. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to spotlight a unique tactical asset allocation ETF. We'll be joined by Premise Capital's Jacob Hutchinson. You're listening to ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime, Nate and Connor in studio. Let's go right to our ETF Spotlight.
It's time for the ETF Spotlight, where each week we highlight one exchange-traded fund. There are thousands of ETFs available to invest in. ETF Prime has sorted through them all, so you don't have to.
The ETF we're spotlighting this week is the Premise Capital Frontier Advantage Diversified Tactical ETF. The ticker symbol on that is TCTL. And joining us via phone from Chicago to discuss this ETF is Jake Hutchinson, Managing Director at Premise Capital. Jake, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, Nate, thanks for the invite.
Jake, let's just dive right in here. This is an ETF of ETFs, and it uses a quantitative asset allocation strategy. Take us from there. How is this ETF constructed?
Yeah, so TCTL is a globally diversified tactical strategy in the tax-efficient ETF structure. We think TCTL can serve as a practical solution for investors that wish to tactically manage their portfolios, controlling the high and low equity exposure while remaining globally diversified among equity and fixed income asset classes. So the portfolio consists of 12 asset classes, all broad-based equity and fixed income classes. There's 7 equity, 5 fixed income, and we do this through the use, as you said, of other ETFs, low-cost exposure to those classes. But just to take a quick step back, prior to launching Premise Capital in 2012, my partners were actually client-facing advisors on a team that for decades had focused on financial planning and asset allocation. And it was after seeing 2 once-in-a-lifetime stock market down moves in the 10-year period, dot-coms and financial crisis, that they crafted models that would attempt to minimize the potential fallout. So our main goal is to ride along in the markets as long as we can while still employing techniques to protect from major prolonged down moves. So the team built what we call frontier-based, referring to the efficient frontier, frontier-based tactical portfolios. And then with the launch of Premise in 2012, we began running these models as separate accounts. And then in 2016, we launched our own index and the ETF TCTL that follows the index. So with TCTL, we're utilizing a rules-based approach rooted in modern portfolio theory, so the benefits of diversification, but we're allowing the current market environment to have a more impactful role on the asset allocation. We do not make concentrated equity bets, and we don't use leverage, but we take the position that tactical moves should be purposeful adjustments to the core asset classes, so we keep a diversified basket that allows for both the adjustments to the core asset classes, to the classes relative to each other, as well as a shift in the overall risk at any given time. So you can think of this as an efficient frontier, right? So optimal risk and return that's created with forward-looking expected return calculations, and then a portfolio that's chosen along that frontier based on whether our analysis points to risk being adequately compensated for in the markets. And that's what we call our frontier-based tactical investing.
How often does this ETF rebalance? And then, I guess, can you explain in a little more detail how the model takes into account current market conditions? In other words, what triggers the shift among asset classes?
Sure. So your first question, how often? We deem it ad hoc. So rather than on a systematic, say, calendar schedule, our portfolio is traded any time one of the asset classes change their trend, which leads to your second question about what are the mechanisms to allow us to change these allocations. And I think the best way might be sort of to walk through our latest risk-off move. So we are currently in a defensive posture since November, and so our approach considers what we deem an intermediate trend for each asset class. So in other words, we're trying to balance between being nimble enough so we can get out of a falling asset class and a falling market, but not so sensitive that we're getting unnecessary trading and potential whipsaw movements. So if you think about the course of the last year, and even 2017, where we rode along markets and made very few moves, but 2018 was a different year. And our risk-off move, while we sit at 10 to 15% equity right now since November, the risk-off move really started in April. So at being, since our inception of TCTL in 2016, we were near or at our max equity allocation of 90% until last April. And last April, our model moved us negative on emerging markets. So what's that mean? So we look at a trend indicator on each of the asset classes. And as long as the trend is good, in the uptrend, we have exposure to each of those asset classes. But in this case, that trend moved negative, at least how we look at it. And now the portfolio, when this happens, we re-optimize the portfolio. We reshuffle the deck. And we're effectively moving out of the emerging market risk and finding more attractive risk among the other classes. And then in June, we saw our model go negative on developed international. So again, the portfolio looks for more optimal risk and return elsewhere. So from April to November, we see each of our equity classes roll out of what we consider their intermediate uptrend, culminating in a move out of or away from U.S. large cap around Thanksgiving. And again, conceptually, you can think of this, each of the moves forcing the portfolio down and along the efficient frontier, to lower equity and higher fixed income exposure. And then the important point is to note that when we're risk off, we're taking the stance that the increased chance of a potential large down move outweighs the benefits of remaining invested.
Jake, when you are risk off, and you mentioned being defensively positioned right now, I believe the current allocation is 87% bonds, 13% stocks. And you mentioned there's 12 asset classes that can potentially be held in this portfolio. Will you go all the way to zero in a particular asset class, or is it possible to still have a small sliver of exposure to every asset class?
Yeah, so we can go to zero, and we did nearly zero in emerging markets and developed international back in the spring and early summer. That's a rarity because, and not to get too technical, but with modern portfolio theory, you're looking at three inputs. You're looking at a return component, you're looking at a volatility component called standard deviation, and you're looking at the relationship of the asset classes called correlations. So there is certainly, if the risk in emerging markets is high, and it's also there we can find a low correlated risk among another class, yes, emerging market could go to zero. But the portfolio is generally built so that we remain in a globally diversified basket.
Our guest is Jake Hutchinson, Managing Director at Premise Capital. We're spotlighting their Frontier Advantage Diversified Tactical ETF, ticker symbol TCTL. Jake, this ETF, I noticed, doesn't hold really any alternatives, right? There's no gold, commodities. I do think it holds real estate, but why is that? Why no gold, commodities, or other alternatives?
Yeah, it's a good observation. So when we built the portfolios, it's not to say that we don't think gold or managed futures aren't important asset classes. We think they are. But we think that our portfolio is more an extension of a core, a true core. And those classes are for the advisor and or the investor to decide based on their views of those classes. We wanted to stick to big, liquid, beta classes to give exposure around the core and to leave those more alternative and commodity classes to the investor to decide.
All right. So given that the ETF will move up and down the risk spectrum depending upon market conditions, how should this be used in a portfolio? How should investors think about, applying this to their portfolio?
Yeah, so I mentioned before we think of our portfolio as an extension of the core. So if markets are, think of it as if markets are in a prolonged upward trend, we expect to look very much like an investor's existing core, globally diversified basket of equity and fixed income ETFs. However, if we're in a prolonged downward trend, then you would expect our strategy to move more methodically down and along the efficient frontier to a more conservative allocation. And if you think of it from the financial planning process, where you sit down, you determine your time horizon, your risk tolerance, you're effectively determining with your risk tolerance your high equity exposure. So, for example, a balanced client may be determined as a 60-40 mix, meaning 60% equity, 40% fixed income, 60% equity being that high equity allocation. You may also consider where to be positioned if markets are really uncertain and risky. And now that's establishing a low equity exposure. So we encourage the advisor or the investor to consider both where they feel comfortable at a high equity exposure, where they feel comfortable at a low equity exposure, and then Premise TCTL can fit in between. So effectively, if you're a 60-40 investor and put 20% into TCTL, you're a 60-40 investor that can go down to a 40-60 or anywhere in between, but knowing that within TCTL, you're getting a diversified approach without the risk of leverage or major concentrated bets.
Digging in a little bit more there, and I guess maybe just playing a little bit of a devil's advocate, what about for investors who just say, you know, look, I'll manage my own risk allocation, right? I will have 60% stocks, 40% bonds, static, I'm good. Mm-hmm. Why consider TCTL in that situation?
Yeah, well, I think two things there. Number one, and I think so I'll approach sort of the against the buy and hold in a second, but just from a practical solution, the benefit of us putting our approach inside an ETF is really the tax efficiency. And I know, you've probably had a million calls on ETF liquidity and the tax efficiency. It's almost become cliche, but I think the point is really important, is that when we move between asset classes, we've shown over our three calendar years that we can do it without distributing capital gains to the end investor. So in other words, when we move risk off from, say, U.S. large cap into the fixed income, we've been able to avoid the capital gains consequences, which is really important for after-tax return if an investor is putting taxable money to work. Regarding more of a long-term strategic portfolio, you know, this investment is for somebody who wants to be able to take risk off the table. In fact, we don't think of TCTL as a one-ticket drop. We don't think it as the entire portfolio. And that's why we talk about it as a complement to the core. We think the ideal investor for TCTL is somebody who wants a smooth returns and maybe minimize risk over time, meaning that TCTL is not always going to outperform the broader markets, just as the broader markets are not always going to outperform TCTL. But married together, we think it might give the investor a smoother long-term return stream.
Jake, we only have about a minute left here. The topic of our show today has been ETF due diligence prior to you joining us. And since this ETF owns other ETFs, I'm just curious, just at a high level, what does your screening process look like to determine the best ETF for a given asset class?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. So we first determine the asset classes. So the 12 asset classes are permanent. The ETFs we choose for each one just have to be the among the biggest and most liquid, because for us it's a matter of when we need to exit or enter that class, we need to do it very easily and very cheaply.
Well, Jake, with that, we'll have to leave it there. Excellent spotlight today. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Nate.
That was Jake Hutchinson, Managing Director at Premise Capital. The ETF is the Premise Capital Frontier Advantage Diversified Tactical ETF. And you can learn more about this ETF by visiting tctl.us. That's tctl.us. That'll do it for ETF Prime. I want to thank our exclusive sponsor, Legg Mason. You can visit leggmason.com to learn more about their broad range of investment strategies. Podcasts of ETF Prime are available at etfprime.com, etf.com, iTunes, and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nate Geraci and at CKelly1980. Next week, we're going to recap the world's largest ETF conference, Inside ETF. So I'll offer my thoughts. We'll hear from etf.com's Dave Nottig. And we'll also be joined by Legg Mason's Ambar Bajaj and WisdomTree's Jeremy Schwartz. So we'll get their thoughts on the conference and look at a few of their ETFs as well. Should be a fun show. Until then, have a great week, everyone.